Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
2008, three Irish parish priests hit the headlines when they signed a record deal worth £1.4 million sterling. Fathers Eugene and Martin O'Hagan, a pair of brothers from Derry, and their friend Father David DeLargy from Ballymena, released their debut album as The Priests. It was simply called, you remember that? There was a cross on the cover of the CD, and they travelled the world. They sold millions of records. They performed for three popes. They met Rihanna herself, recorded a music single for Christmas with Shane McGowan. And so I'm joined by the priests themselves, because what a story it is. All three of them are on the line. Good morning to you, Father Eugene, first of all.
Good morning. Good morning, Oliver.
Good morning. Father Martin is there as well.
Yes, that's me. Good morning, Oliver.
And Father David.
Good morning, Oliver.
Brilliant. Thank you all for joining us. Now, Father Eugene, we'll start with you. Tell us how three priests working in parishes, very busy parishes in the north, ended up getting this record deal.
Well, it's a surprising story. We were asked to do an audition. So we were looking simply for one priest to act as a kind of a vocal bridge between tracks on a religious album that they were planning. When they heard the three of us singing together, heard our backstory, heard their two brothers that we've been singing for years, they came back and said, well, look, we're going to park that plan, and we'd like to make this musical album with yourselves, if you're interested. Well, were we interested? It was, and that's basically how it happened. It was purely accidental. We weren't looking for it. Mm-hmm. They came and found us, and whoosh, it just went into another stratosphere.
It went global entirely. Father Eugene, you were all performing in music, weren't you? It was in your bones, in your soul.
It was in our bones and in our soul, in our families. We were very fortunate, Martin, myself and David, to have been exposed to a musical family, and the nurturing and the encouragement that we received from them, and of course from our old school, beautiful, wonderful school with a musical, great musical tradition. So that set us up really for what happened in 2008.
And Father David, when you heard that Eugene and Martin were going to do this audition, how were you feeling about your chances?
First of all, I was glad that I was offered the opportunity to go and audition, but I didn't really fancy my chances, Oliver, to be honest, because, Eugene and Martin are such wonderful singers. I didn't really think that I was going to have much of a chance. But I thought, well, I'll throw my hat into the ring anyway, because you never know. And I'm very glad I did.
It really worked out. Sony, they weren't looking, as you say, for three priests. Somebody put it crudely, didn't they? They were looking for Pavarotti in a dog collar.
And yes.
they had a certain view of pop stars at the time, didn't they? And you didn't exactly fit that mould that they were looking for in 2008.
I think at that time they were looking for people who were young and good looking and, you know, had a certain sex appeal, if I might put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
They certainly were not looking for three middle-aged priests. I don't think we kind of ticked their boxes at that time. But clearly there was something there that they saw and were interested in and decided to go with it.
And a market for it as well.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, you know, they were probably thinking of, you know, Catholic people across the world. But of course, the whole project appealed to so many more people beyond simply Catholic people. You know, it was really something that touched the hearts of people of kind of no faith and of other Christian churches.
Absolutely.
And so on. So it really was quite surprising, the reach that it had.
And Father David, you obviously weren't one of the two brothers. Did you all know each other, though?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So Martin and I are classmates from school. Mm-hmm. We started school together in 1974. Eugene, same school, just a few years ahead of us. So we've been singing together really since the age of 11, since Martin and I were 11 years old. So we were kind of celebrating our 50th anniversary there towards the end of 2024.
Extraordinary. Because you've performed together in musical societies and whatnot.
We did, yes. Well, after leaving school, we came up to Queen's University in Belfast. We went to the same singing teacher. We were involved in choirs, you know, Queen's University choir, the university or the choir at the Irish College in Rome. We sang as a trio, you know, for various celebrations there, St. Patrick's Day, All the Saints of Ireland, those kind of big feast days. we would have done a sort of little trio act. When we came back to Belfast, then we were involved in Castle Ward Opera, which is our local opera company at that time. And then we founded a choir together in 1995 called Cappella Ciciliana, which is still celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. Wow. So we sang with them from 95 up until 2008, and then we took a little break to kind of embrace the Priests project.
When you did the audition and the Sony, obviously negotiations have to happen with the record company. How do those negotiations go? Martin, I suppose, if I send that question towards you.
Well, thank you. The negotiations went very, very well. We met in London after a bit of a whirlwind tour, getting all sorts of aspects in order, including the contract, of course. But in terms of the choosing of music, that was quite amicable. We sat down and came up with all those pieces that would be very popular. And I think there was a real sense of agreement in the room. And we decided to go for those pieces that people really loved, and ourselves, like Panis Angelicus, Ave Maria, among others. So it was actually very went very well, and they went with it, and the first album appeared, the Priests. But coming back to the contract, we on the morning of the contract, which sort of came out of the blue for us, we didn't expect to be signing the contract just so quickly in front of Westminster Cathedral, but we hadn't even informed the bishop yet at this stage. So that was a very important issue to start.
That was a big one. Yeah. Yeah.
So Eugene was, as the venerable one of the group, he then headed over to the bishop and explained everything, so that he gave the green light. So thankfully.
Father Eugene, was that a tense meeting?
No, actually, what happened was I'd actually told our press officer the night before, because I said I think there may be some media interest in this. It just shows you maybe naive we were, unprepared. Mm-hmm. I think Sony and those who were around us kind of kept us, just fed us enough information, but not too much, in case we got frightened. No, afterwards I met the bishop. He came in and talked about some other topic, and he says, "Well, now tell me about this recording deal that you've signed."
And he saw this on television, didn't he? He was watching this.
No, I don't think he was, actually. But he certainly heard about it very shortly afterwards from the press officer. But he said something very interesting to me. He said, "Look, now I know you've, because David and Martin have said we've been singing together in the diocese for years. So in one sense, it was an endorsement, shall we say, of the music we've been making for a long, long time." And he said, "Look, you are talented. But music is a great gift. But remember also your gift of priesthood." And that puts it. And then he said, "Now you're the oldest. I'm putting you in charge of these boys. You watch them. Keep them on the straight and narrow. Don't let them veer off or jump out of the bowl they were baked in."
No throwing tellies out of hotel rooms. That was
no throwing tellies. Just be well behaved. And that was it. And he gave us his blessing and said, "Look," and he didn't know that, and nor did we, that it was just going to be just as successful as it became.
You were obviously very good in negotiating, Father David, because you got a unique clause that music executives certainly would not have been used to, because if someone has a career before they come to them, they tell them, forget it forever.
Yeah, I think if they're signing up a new act, they'd like them to be available to travel the world to promote their albums and recordings and do concerts and so on. They basically want to take over your life. Of course, that wasn't going to be possible for us, given our commitments in our diocese and our parishes. So we needed to make it very clear to them from the get-go that we wouldn't be leaving our parishes. We would have a certain availability to them, but certainly not maybe to the extent that they might have wished. So they were happy enough to go along with that. They respected our commitments very much, and we were able to make it work in some fashion that was good for them and for us as well.
The first album, was that recorded in Rome?
There were parts of it that were recorded in Rome. Much of our vocals were recorded, believe it or not, much closer to home, in a wonderful recording studio up in Collibaki, believe it or not. And so we did a lot of our vocals there. The orchestra recorded elsewhere, but the choral backing, the choral parts that were sung by a Vatican choir.
Yeah.
They recorded in St. Peter's Basilica.
Wow.
And we travelled over to record some parts of the album there with them. So it was a wonderful experience. We had, they actually closed St. Peter's Basilica early.
Wow.
To facilitate our recording, and there was just ourselves there. And so it was a magnificent experience.
That was an extraordinary honour to get, and that's to any of you, Eugene or Martin as well, because obviously you had studied there, hadn't you, in the Vatican?
We had been there in the Irish College attending the Pontifical Gregorian University for our theological studies and other studies. So Eugene obviously had been there before us, and Martin and I went out in 1985. We were there till ordination in 89. So our paths kind of overlapped there.
Yeah.
During that period, and we had chances to go to the Vatican on many, many occasions to sing for the papal liturgies, you know, at Christmas and Easter and at other times. So we were very privileged to have had that opportunity.
And we see in the documentary, obviously, the whirlwind really begins, doesn't it? The release of the album, it goes out into 42 countries on the one day. The success is just incredible. In fact, there's a Guinness World Record here.
It took us all very much by surprise, Oliver. And we were actually doing a TV program in the UK one morning, and they surprised us by bringing out the Guinness Book of Records certificate and letting us know that we had achieved that. And it was for the fastest-selling classical debut act in the UK, a record which I believe still stands
still
today.
Stands.
So, you know, you really have to kind of pinch yourself at times when you realise how the whole thing evolved and the success that it achieved. It was really marvellous.
Straight to number one, a million copies sold in just 5 weeks, and it goes up to 1.6 million. And these are physical sales, as they were in 2008, 2009. I mean, just extraordinary. Culture shock to you as well, because obviously suddenly you're on chat shows, you're meeting celebrities like Rihanna. That must be a great memory.
That was quite a bizarre moment. It was the Jonathan Ross show.
That's right, yeah.
On TV, and Rihanna was one of the guests appearing that night. And and we met the Killers,
wow.
And we met the actor Hugh Grant. We met different people, you know, at different times, and we met Take That. We met members of Boyzone. So they were kind of, it brought you into, a musical fraternity. We met some of our great classical heroes as well.
Oh, yeah.
Plácido Domingo and José Carreras, and rubbing shoulders with people like that at the Royal Albert Hall. We had been nominated 3 times for Classical Album of the Year, and we got to walk the red carpet and do all that sort of exciting stuff.
Wow.
So it brought us into a completely different environment than the one that we had been inhabiting up until then. Very, very exciting days, I have to say.
It was, you're obviously still doing your pastoral work, your parish work, funerals, baptisms, all of the usual. What did you make of stepping in from your normal world into this red carpet world of celebrity and entertainment?
Well, as I say, it was a whole new experience to us. It was the sort of thing that you saw in glossy magazines and in television and so on. And to find ourselves kind of propelled into that environment was very exciting. It was new. It was wonderful. But you had to kind of come back down to earth as well. That wasn't our lifestyle. And
nice.
It wasn't ever going to be our lifestyle. It was, you were just kind of dipping into it momentarily, you know, a little experience, and then back to your parish, to the everyday work of a parish priest, you know, as you say, with the weddings and the baptisms, the funerals, the school mm-hmm. visits, and you know, the various liturgies and so on. So that kind of kept us very grounded. So you got these great highs of the wonderful experiences, and then you were really back down. So that kept us level-headed, I think.
And you had to keep working, as you say. People obviously were wondering what priests were doing at a big record contract worth so much. But at the start, you announced very early on what was happening with the money. Is that right, Father Martin?
Yes, I think it was our intention always to endeavour to set up a trust. So we set up the priest's charitable trust, and so we did our utmost. It's a drop in the ocean, but nevertheless, we hoped that it would make some difference. So we we did indeed try to help a number of different organisations and still try to do that. So we helped with Sight Savers, for instance, and we also set up a contributed to the setting up of a school called Hidden Treasure in Uganda. We've been working with a Presbyterian doctor who was doing a lot of work out there, and so we helped to support that. I'm very, very glad to do so. We also worked with an organization in Thailand as well to help children who were on the streets, to bring them in and to give them support as well, and to help them to face the future with a little bit of hope. So there was a number of issues that we tried our best to help with, and musical aspects as well, to encourage young singers as well and other musicians to develop, and
the Ulster Orchestra and so on.
The Ulster Orchestra, yes, and other organizations. But as I say, you know, these were done very, very quietly, and hope that many people will benefit in the future, sowing the seeds really, in a sense, Oliver, for the future. So it's been a great honor and privilege for us to do so, and thank God we've had the ability to do it.
I hope you were able to pay yourself something as well. I mean, it's extremely hard work recording and performing all around the world and promoting what you're doing.
Yes, I mean, yes, in terms of you've got to keep the show on the road, I suppose. Yeah. And that was part of the reality of this whole music world and industry that we were faced with for the very first time. You know, so in a sense, yes, it has been very positive. It's been very worthwhile. If we have something, it's a small amount that would maybe help us towards our expenses and to keep everything going. But otherwise, we endeavoured to bring the music as far as we could and as long as we could, and to have achieved 17 years when quite a lot of other boy bands had maybe slipped away and disappeared. There we were, singing. Middle-aged boy band. But anyhow, the music has been absolutely superb, and it's been a wonderful gift. Thankful to God and to all those who have supported us from day one.
Showbiz suits you. It really suits you. You get the dig in there. That's perfect. Father Eugene, of all the mad showbiz things that went on, what an extraordinary thing to record a Christmas song with Shane McGowan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a bit of a jaw drop thinking that, you know, we come from different musical traditions, shall we say, different genres, and we might be in a slower lane maybe than Shane in terms of music. But look, it was a pot shot. We approached him, and well, we weren't sure whether he would be interested. But you know, he was. I think his family and his mother kind of liked the sound that the priests made, so he was up for making the track "Little Drummer Boy," because it was a track that he loved himself.
Yeah.
And he provided the descant pieces in it and the perumpa pum pum element, and he did it extremely well. And we had a wonderful meeting with him in Dublin in the recording studio. When I was a wee bit late, I have to say, Shane's not, I think, wasn't known for sharp timekeeping. But we waited, and we said we wanted to meet the man, we wanted to work with him and you together, rather than him record his bits and we record ours separately. Yeah. So we had a lovely couple of hours with him then in the recording studio, and just chatting in the green room, you know, just about life in general. And I know people think that Shane wasn't, he wasn't too religious, but he, you know, when we had a conversation with him, there was a spirituality in Shane that maybe was hidden, and that came out in his poetry, came out in his lyrics, etc. And we just had that privileged little moment with him. So that's one of the highlights.
That was lovely. And he had a Catholic mass funeral in the end. This is a question for any one of you, I suppose. Do you think the music and what you did it bring people to the church at all? How did the two worlds collide?
Let me have a wee stab at that. In a gentle way. We weren't out to proselytize or to convert, through the music. But it has undoubtedly touched the heart and the souls of many people. Many people who already kind of knew the music and appreciated its depth. Then there were others who were maybe on the periphery of things, maybe not Christian in a sense. They were just searching for God, searching for the other in life, and they found a way in through hearing the music, and then becoming more interested. And then I think some people were in touch with us personally, and others have told us their own stories, that it kind of sparked something for them. And they went on a search and they found what they were looking for. And we helped, I think, to do that. And it was a great privilege to be able to do it. I don't think we realized we had that outreach, but it's hugely affirming. And that we hear people's stories that the music has helped them. And that's one of them. Yeah. That's one of the things we wanted to do when we were singing together.
Father David, obviously you got the blessing of the bishop to go ahead, but when the fame came and the success, was the hierarchy in the church generally happy? Because you're mixing with all these music industry types, you're appearing on chat shows and so on. Was there any blowback at all?
There wasn't any blowback at all. I imagine it was something that would have been discussed among the bishops and, you know, the papal nuncio and cardinals and people like that. But there were people who knew us very well. Our bishops would have known us very well. Cardinal Brady had been, you know, head of the Irish College in Rome. He would have known us very well. So I imagine that they probably spoke positively for us, you know. I think they probably thought these guys are not going to, you know, rock the boat too much. You know, let's just watch and see how it goes. And I think the fact that we had been asked, or we had been able to record in the Vatican, we had been invited actually by the Vatican to come over and perform at an event taking place there for seminarians and novices and young people who are on a vocational path. We did that concert for them in Rome. So I imagine among themselves they had discussed it and decided that it was just worth watching and see how it evolves. But we felt that we had the support and the goodwill, you know.
Very good. When the debut album was released, obviously you're all doing publicity around that. 2008, 2009, this is a very challenging time for the brand of the Catholic Church in the world. Obviously, I think it's around the same time as the Ryan Report, that's 2009, which detailed the extent of clerical abuse and cover up the historical scandals were swirling. You're out on a publicity tour for an album. You got asked quite a lot about this subject, didn't you? How did you deal with it?
We were nervous, I think, going into many of our interviews because we thought that this was an issue that would certainly come up. Mm-hmm. We hoped that we would be able to make a reasonable and considered response to it. And while we weren't sent out as spokespersons for the church, we obviously, as three priests, we had to. Be the face of the church, if you like, the official hierarchical church in that moment.
Yeah.
And we certainly didn't want to speak defensively about things. We had to acknowledge the harm and the hurt that had been done, the mistakes that had been made, and kind of reflect that sense of shock that many of us experienced ourselves. We were going through all the kind of emotions of disappointment and shock and anger, I think, as well, that was kind of about at that time. We were trying to come to terms, if you like, with our own, you know, emotional response to these things.
Nice.
And I think we did our best to reflect that in an honest way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at all times, having a consciousness of the hurt and the harm that had been caused, and hopefully not sort of adding to that in any way, but maybe give an insight into how we ourselves maybe were feeling and responding at that time.
Which you indeed had to do back in your parish. Your fans are in touch with us on the text. Marie in West Cork says, can you ask the priest if it gave them the realisation that fame and money doesn't make you happy? Eugene, you're the boss.
No, fame and money doesn't make you happy. That is very, very true. I mean, we see that all the time in our social media and in our newspapers, etc. Yeah, I mean, in a sense, you know, fame is a bit of a drug, and then you get a high, and then you have to, in a sense, you have to feed it. And I think what happens is, you know, for maybe a singer, a musician, an artist, a celebrity, when you're not feeding that fame, you have to turn somewhere else, and that's the danger. Where do you go? What do you turn? Where do you go? And it's about maybe sometimes unfortunate and mistaken choices, rather than, you know, badness on the part of anybody. It's just bad choices. at a time, and it has a pivotal effect on people's lives. And, you know, you hear all kinds of stories from our agent and manager who tells us, you know, about kind of the rock and roll world of celebritydom and fame. People get, you know, get all kinds of ideas about themselves, which are completely unrealistic. And that's going too far. So we were fortunate. We had good people around us. We were a bit older when we became famous, shall we say. We had a life experience to form us, and that kept us right.
Able to handle it all. Well, congratulations on the incredible story, and people can enjoy and they can watch The Priest. Don't Give Up the Day Job. Is that the name? Has it a different name on BBC as compared to RT?
Yeah, it's called Faith and Fame on the BBC, but I think Faith and Fame. Up the Day Job is just as good.
Okay. That's on RT One Television at 6:30 on Easter Sunday, this coming Easter Sunday, and it tells your story. But for the moment, thank you so much for talking to us, Father Martin, Father thank Eugene, you. And Father David. Enjoy and good luck with Holy Week, because I know you're busy.
Busy. Thank you. Yeah. Happy Easter.
Same to you. Same to you all.
Thanks, Oliver. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.